Welcome to the UAlbany News Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah O'Carroll. The United Nations Landmark Report on Climate Change, issued in October, warns of mass food shortages, widespread wildfires, and a catastrophic loss of coral reefs as soon as 2040. With me today is Brian Greenhill, an associate professor of political science in UAlbany's Rockefeller College. His research focuses on the politics of climate change and public persuasion.
Climate change warnings often seem far off and hard to imagine, but not today. This morning, the UN's climate change panel released what its authors claim is the most important climate change report ever published. And they're telling us that we need, quote, rapid, far-reaching and unprecedented changes in all aspects of society.
Brian, policymakers take one of two approaches when addressing the risks of climate change. Can you break down for us the argument for each side?
Okay, so most of the discussion about the impact of climate change focuses on what we call mitigation strategies, which means efforts to try to reduce the extent of the problem, insofar as we're reducing the amount of greenhouse gases that are released into the atmosphere, which will then in turn reduce the extent to which the atmosphere warms up and results in climate change. So these kinds of preventive strategies are what we call mitigation, because it doesn't stop the problem entirely, but it will at least make the problem less acute than it's going to be. The second set of approaches that we talk about are what are called adaptation approaches, which is about getting human society to adapt to the fact that we're living in a world with a changing climate. So we're going to see, as a result of higher average temperatures, we're going to see rising sea levels, more flooding, we're going to see more extreme weather events like hurricanes and wildfires. And so part of what we have to do as a human society is just adapt to these changes.
Okay. Now, how do these positions critique or perhaps attempt to undercut the countervailing view?
So within the environmental community, there's been a lot of hesitance to address the or to encourage people to embrace adaptation measures, because the worry is that if you get people to start adapting to climate change rather than trying to mitigate it, they'll then feel that perhaps climate change is some more manageable kind of problem. I mean, of course, we want people to think of this as being a problem that they can and should take action to try to solve, but we want the focus mainly to be on trying to kind of mitigate the larger problem in the first place. In other words, we want the focus to be on trying to keep the rising global temperatures from rising too far. And the understandable concern on the part of many environmental advocates has been that if you shift the discussion to focusing instead on the issue of adaptation and how we kind of adapt and get used to living in a warming world, then people will start to become somewhat complacent about dealing with the fact that we do need to actually stop this problem from potentially becoming more or potentially catastrophic in years to come.
Almost that adapting is not solving the problem, and that's not the only approach we should take.
That's right. I mean, you can think of it as almost like the difference between like prevention and cure. I mean, we all know it's much better to say prevent some disease or some bad outcome than to just have to cure it or deal with it once you already have the disease. When it comes to dealing with climate change, there's still obviously a lot we can do with regard to prevention, in this case what we call mitigation, but at the same time, we're, you know, as we've seen with, you know, extreme weather events just in the past 5 or 10 years, that, you know, climate change has already arrived. You know, it's here, we're having to deal with it, and whether we like it or not, we're having to take all these steps towards adapting to it. But the kind of interesting policy question then is whether taking these steps or having this public discussion about taking these steps to adapt to it is going to in some ways kind of discourage people from thinking more long term about, doing things to slow down the rise of global temperatures in a way that will have an impact on our children or grandchildren's generation.
Okay. Now, I know that your research demonstrates that these two approaches you've been explaining can actually have a more symbiotic relationship. So what guidance can you offer to policymakers and environmental activists in how we talk about the consequences of climate change in the US?
Sure. So the key takeaway really from our research has been that, you know, we needn't shy away from discussing adaptation. That policymakers should certainly be encouraging people and taking we really need to take a very aggressive position with regard to mitigation, but at the same time we can discuss adaptation efforts. And to be honest, we should really consider kind of encouraging people to think about these adaptation efforts, because our results suggest that not only does adaptation not have that negative consequence of discouraging people from thinking about mitigation, but it might actually help make the problem seem more kind of realistic to them, or more makes them kind of more motivated to do something about it. So the two can actually go hand in hand, as you suggested.
Well, that's really interesting that what your survey found. Can you talk a little bit more about how you and your colleagues went about this, and what specifically were you assessing, and who did you talk to get these answers?
Sure. Okay. So what we did was an actual controlled experiment, which people are certainly very familiar with in the natural sciences or the physical sciences, but in the social sciences, it's probably less familiar to most people. Mm. And what's interesting about this is that we can actually do a study where we expose different respondents to different types of information. This is often done in the context of what we call a survey-based experiment,
okay,
where we're asking participants to take part in some kind of survey questionnaire. But the interesting kind of experimental twist in all of this is that rather than asking everyone to take the same survey, we're asking people to take slightly different variations of that survey, where we are manipulating some particular variable of interest. So for instance, it's often used to test, like say, the impact that different framing strategies have on a political candidate's message, where you can say, let's deliver the same message, but couch it in one set of terms, and then we'll give the same message to another group of people couched in a slightly different set of terms, and we'll see if there's any difference between these two groups. So it's really kind of analogous to what, say, medical researchers do when they look at the difference between a group of patients taking an actual active drug and a group of patients taking a placebo drug. So we can try out the same things with regard to messaging on an issue like climate change and see if there's a difference. So that's the kind of larger kind of context in which this kind of research is taking place. And so what we were doing for the purposes of this study was trying to ask people about their level of support for a typical strategy that's used to try to mitigate climate change. And in this case, the strategy that we were discussing was a gas tax, or an increase in the federal gas tax to basically put a price on carbon and make it discourage people from using so much gas in their vehicles, and as a result, helping to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide being released into the atmosphere, and on the long term, reducing the extent of global warming.
Okay, so I know you kind of previewed the answer already, but can you talk about the most surprising finding of what specifically you found?
Sure. So, what we ended up doing then, in the experimental design here, was to try to vary the way in which we presented the costs of inaction to the respondents. So for one group of people, we told them, you know, if we do, you know, we said, you know, climate change is a problem. We asked them to read what was this kind of fake newspaper article basically saying, you know, discussing what were very kind of generic things, saying, you know, that the transportation sector is responsible for about a third of the contribution that our country is making to climate change. And that scientists are therefore proposing that we adopt a higher gas tax in order to try to combat that. And then we ask people, how much more would you be willing to pay per gallon of gas in order to combat this problem? And so in one scenario, we presented them with just kind of the stark outline here and saying, you know, if we fail to act, then we're likely to face some kind of environmental catastrophe in the years to come. In the other experimental conditions, we did things like telling people that if we fail to act, then the world will continue to get hotter, and as a result, we'll be likely to have to pay more in other ways. For example, we'll have to like pay a higher monthly electricity bill as a result of the fact that there'll be greater strain put on the electric grid as a result of higher demands for air conditioning and extreme temperatures and things like that. So we wanted to see really if there was a difference between people who were just presented with this kind of, you know, you'd better do something or else it's going to be
philosophical almost.
Sure, that there's this problem out there that we need to do something to solve, that we can't see it just now, but there's going to be a catastrophe if we don't do something about it, as opposed to people in the experimental situations who were told we need to do something about this now, or else in the coming years you're going to have to pay more for your electricity bill or for your food bill or something like that. And what we ended up finding was that rather than discouraging people from supporting the gas tax, which in this case was the mitigation strategy, it actually made them more likely to support it.
I feel like that's a positive result, that people can be persuaded to take action when they can see these very immediate consequences, and so it's not just this abstract problem. So, and you focused on gasoline tax as a successful mitigation strategy. Do you have others that would likely be just as effective?
Sure. So in our study, we only looked at a gas tax, and so we were certainly careful to point out in our discussion that, you know, this finding, although it's intriguing, is certainly not the last word on the debate about the possible trade-off between adaptation and mitigation. So other ways, you know, other kinds of costs that people are likely to incur may have a different impact on their willingness to support mitigation efforts. And of course, paying more for gas is just one policy in which we may try to deal with climate change. You know, there are certainly many others that you can think of. And so I think this is like an exciting area of research for other scholars to look at, how asking people about different kinds of potential costs they may have to pay might make them more or less likely to support efforts to tackle climate change.
Now, looking at those other variables, is that how you would say future political scientists should build on these discoveries, or can you point to something that might be next in this line of research?
So, I mean, one thing that I'm especially interested in is the question of how the way in which we present people with a sense of kind of personal agency affects their willingness to combat climate change. And there's been some interesting research done by other scholars looking at how ways of framing climate change that incur a kind of feeling of helplessness on the part of people might actually make them less willing to support efforts to combat the problem. This is one of the real challenges we face with climate change communication, because obviously we want to convey to the public the gravity of the problem. I mean, it's right. Essential that people realize that, you know, it's not just that we're going to have slightly warmer summers or you know, a few more wildfires or things that maybe in people's kind of perceptions seem to be, you know, maybe really bad, but nonetheless kind of survivable problems. But instead, we need to really convey the fact that this is going to be potentially catastrophic. But on the same hand, we don't want to make them think that it's so catastrophic that, you know, we may as well just kind of enjoy life while we can and then deal, you know, let someone else worry about the consequences 50 or 100 years from now. So there really is something we can do. And so some kind of experimental research using a similar framework has in the past found that priming people with these very kind of catastrophic, fear-inducing messages can actually make them less likely to do something to support it. So, or to take action in the case of supporting these mitigation efforts. So what's a kind of interesting question that I think then emerges out of our research is the possibility that adaptation, that discussing adaptation matters not just because it's useful for people to be thinking realistically about these adaptation measures, but it's actually helping them in this more indirect way by sort of helping kind of ground the problem in this more kind of everyday reality, thinking, well, climate change is not just a problem that my children and grandchildren will have to face, but actually it's something that I'll be facing, you know, maybe as soon as like this year in terms of my electricity bills. And so perhaps giving them that sense of agency is helping to kind of take away some of these fears and making them less likely to just want to kind of bury their heads in the sand and not confront this as a pressing problem.
That's really interesting. Now, do you have any, I guess, final thoughts on how else we might battle this ignorance or apathy, this malaise regarding the future of our planet? Because as you've been speaking to, there is so much at stake, and it's not just for our children, but it's for right now and in this lifetime. So anything else that you want to share about being educated on the effects of climate change and how we can better persuade people to
take
action?
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, you know, obviously this is a major problem that we're dealing with, but as you know, anyone who studies the topic will tell you, it's incredibly difficult to motivate people to really care about it because it's something that we can't see. You know, it's something which, when you just look at the numbers, when atmospheric scientists talk about the potentially catastrophic impact of a 2 degree centigrade temperature rise, most people think, well, you know, who cares? It's, you know, the temperature fluctuates, you know, tens of degrees from one day to another. So why should that matter? You know, won't it kind of be nicer to have a slightly warmer climate? But instead, you know, we're trying to get people to care about this small change that actually will have these incredibly significant downstream consequences. And it's complicated by the fact that there's always going to be some degree of scientific uncertainty about any of these specific consequences that are projected. But what we can say with real certainty is that if we do nothing, there will be all sorts of bad things happening. So it's, you know, we need to get people to care about it. We need to get people to kind of realize the magnitude of the problem and to start to invest in possible solutions. What's made things really difficult here in the US especially is that it's become so partisan in terms of the differences between Democrats and Republicans on this issue. I saw actually just in the news just before coming here that the Pew Research Organization did a survey or released the results of a survey yesterday asking Americans what particular issues they found to be very concerning. And it gives a breakdown between Democrats and Republicans for a bunch of different issues. And looking at the issue of climate change, if I remember correctly, 72% of Democrats say that they're very concerned about climate change, but only 11% of Republicans say they're very concerned about it.
Wow.
So it's kind of tragic that we've ended up in a place where this kind of scary reality that 97 or 98% of atmospheric scientists believe is something that humans are causing and that we need to address, you know, is showing such a massive kind of partisan difference in support. And so, unfortunately, I don't know what the right answer is in terms of trying to depoliticize it now that it's become kind of almost kind of poisoned by the party politics here. But certainly, you know, if we can find some way to move the US to the position that most other developed countries are in, whereby parties, you know, on both ends of the political spectrum are kind of in firm agreement about the reality of human-caused climate change and the need to take actions to stop that. So I don't have any great answers, but I definitely think this is a really important area of research for people to be working on in the coming years.
We can care more if we're looking at these variables.
Yes, I mean, anything, anytime we see that some kind of intervention leads people to become more willing to support some effort to mitigate climate change is a good thing, because no matter how small that effect is, it shows that we're doing something right. We're moving in that direction.
Well, very neat. Brian, thank you so much for being here.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the UAlbany News podcast. I'm your host, Sarah O'Carroll, and that was Brian Greenhill, an associate professor of political science in UAlbany's Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy. You can let us know what you thought of the episode by emailing us at mediarelations@albany.edu, and you can find us on Twitter @UAlbanyNews.